Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guest is Dr. Rafael Perez, General and Colorectal Surgeon at Great Lakes Surgical Specialists, part of UPMC Hammett. And we welcome Dr. Perez into this edition of Business Spotlight featuring UPMC Hammett. Dr. Perez, can you discuss your background and the road that led you to UPMC Hammett?
Thanks for having me on today. So I've actually had a pretty circuitous journey that led me here to Erie and UPMC. I was actually born in North Carolina, but didn't live there long, then moved to Puerto Rico. My mom is a native, so I lived there from when I was an infant up until around age 9, and then moved to Texas, to Waco, Texas, and kind of grew up there and went to college at University of Alabama, and then came back to Texas to do my medical school. From there, I ended up across the country in Buffalo, actually, just an hour and a half north of here, to do my general surgery training. I knew I was always a hands-on person and was attracted to surgery early on in med school. And then in residency, I had great mentors in colorectal surgery, and I developed an interest in that specialty. So I ended up moving to Philly at the beginning of the pandemic, and I did an advanced laparoscopic and robotic colorectal fellowship with really one of the pioneers in minimally invasive colorectal surgery, Dr. John Marks. And then from there, I never really expected to end up in Erie, but one thing I've learned is that everything happens for a reason. So I took a call from a recruiter and I took a chance, and I am really glad that I did. I was immediately impressed by the people here, by the state-of-the-art facilities at Hammett, just really the focus on great patient care here. I have excellent partners, I have attentive, supportive administrators, and it's just really made a transition from fellowship quite seamless for me, which has been great. So, and, you know, from my end, there's a need for MIS, minimally invasive options in general and colorectal surgery, and I think I bring a lot to the table here, and I'm glad that I can contribute to that great patient experience at UPMC.
Wow, that was quite the journey to Erie, Pennsylvania, Dr. Perez. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Let's dive into the topic of colorectal cancer awareness, because March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. Why is it important to focus on colorectal cancer illness, and how can it be prevented?
Yeah, I mean, in my biased opinion, I think it should be Colorectal Awareness Month every month, but March is it's a good month. So, you know, colorectal cancer is a big deal, and I got some good news and some bad news, and I'll start with the bad news. You know, colon cancer is the third most common cancer in men and women, and actually this year alone, the American Cancer Society estimates that around 150,000 new cases of colon cancer will be diagnosed, and that's 1 in 23 men and 1 in 25 women that will be diagnosed during their lifetime. In addition, colon cancer is the third most common cause of cancer-related deaths, and in this year alone, about 50,000 people will die from colon cancer. So the good news is colon cancer is very preventable, and the key, and I'll harp on this the whole interview, is early screening. Since the advent of colonoscopies in the early 80s, and as we have gained a better understanding of the lifestyle-related risk factors for colon cancer, the incidence or the rate of people being diagnosed has decreased steadily over the past few decades.
Just to follow up with you on one of those stats, Dr. Perez, that was a bit surprising. The fact that it's now almost as common in women as it is men tells you how prevalent this disease is.
It is. I think it has been the case. It's, you know, ahead of it, breast cancer, prostate cancer are more common, but you know, women and men do basically get it, colon cancer, equally, and that's why, you know, the guidelines for screening are the same for men and women.
Let's discuss early detection. You already brought up the fact that it's extremely important. Let's go into more detail into why it is.
Yeah, I mean, simply put, it saves lives. You know, most of the deaths related to colon cancer are caused when the cancer has spread to the lymph nodes or to other organs, usually the liver or the lungs. By doing early detection with a colonoscopy or other sorts of screening modalities, which we'll talk about, you can catch, essentially, you can catch the cancer before it's even started, or at least before it's had a chance to spread. So, with early detection and subsequent treatment, then the survival of for colon cancer is quite excellent.
What are some of the main causes of colorectal cancer?
Yeah, that's a pretty complicated question that we still don't completely understand. And if we did, there'd be a cure for all cancer. But broadly speaking, colon cancer and any type of cancer is caused by changes in the DNA inside of our cells. DNA makes up our genes, and our genes develop, you know, they determine a lot more than just how we look. There's, as it relates to cancer, there's certain genes that help cells grow, divide, and stay alive, and those are called oncogenes. And then there's genes that help keep cells in check, keeps them from growing too much, and those are called tumor suppressor genes. And basically, cancer is caused by mutations in that DNA that basically either turns on these oncogenes or turns off those tumor suppressor genes. And this kind of leads to uncontrolled cell growth and then ultimately can develop into cancer. There's some gene mutations that are inherited, meaning they're passed on from our families, from our parents, that can lead to development of colon and rectal cancer. But the majority of these colon cancers are actually due to acquired mutations, meaning mutations that just happen during our lifetime, but we don't pass them on to our children. And there are certain risk factors, which we'll talk about in a bit, that I think that have been linked to some of these acquired mutations. But unfortunately, and I think this is where why we don't have a cure, we don't have a great understanding of what causes a lot of these acquired mutations, which account for almost 90% of all colon cancers.
Doctor, what is a polyp, and what is the next step for a patient when a polyp is discovered during a colonoscopy?
Yeah, so, you know, a polyp is essentially, it's just a small clump of cells that have formed on the inside lining of the colon. And most of these are actually harmless. They're just, you know, cells that have overgrown. But over time, some of these, there's different types of polyps. Some of these polyps can develop into colon cancer. This can take 5, 10, even 15 years for this progression to happen. And the problem with colon polyps is that they're usually not symptomatic, and that's why early screening and detection is key, because usually polyps can be easily removed with the colonoscopy, and that's it. You know, that's the treatment. There's nothing more that's needed. So a polyp in itself, it's not a scary thing as long as it's taken out and detected early.
Dr. Perez, what are some of the steps that people can take to reduce the risk of colon cancer?
So, in addition to screening, there's a few other things that we know that a person can do to decrease their risk of developing colon cancer during their lifetime. You know, I think this applies across many disease processes, but colon cancer has been linked to obesity and lack of physical activity. So maintaining a healthy weight, being active, is important in decreasing some of the risk of developing polyps and colon cancer. And then the other risk factor that we can control, as it were, is our diet. You know, colon cancer has been linked to heavy intake of red meats like beef, pork, lamb, as well as some of the processed meats like hot dogs, sausage, lunch meats. So, you know, a diet heavy in those does put people at increased risk of developing colon cancer and colon polyps. So in general, a diet that's high in fruits, veggies, and whole grains is important in reducing the risk of developing polyps and cancer. And then there has been association as well with alcohol intake and smoking. You know, smoking in itself, again, is linked to many types of disease processes. There has been a link with colon cancer as well. So limiting alcohol and smoking is very important as well.
Dr. Perez, let's discuss screening now. And we want to dig deep into this because for a long time, the suggested age to get a colonoscopy was 50. We're hearing now that it's recommended that you get screened for colon cancer at even a younger age. Let's get into some of those details.
It is, and I'm glad you asked that. Basically, as of last year, the official recommendation for screening is now age 45. So basically, people who are at average risk should begin getting screened by some method, preferably colonoscopy, at age 45. You know, the reason that this change came about is because, unfortunately, over the past few decades, we've actually seen an increasing incidence of colon and rectal cancer in younger and younger patients. And, you know, that's alarming, but that's why we, you know, these changes were made to the screening guidelines so that we can start screening earlier so that we can catch polyps and early cancers and treat them earlier. So again, like I said, this age 45 is for average risk people. This can be changed depending on your risk. You know, people who have a family history of colon cancer should obviously be screened earlier. People who have a personal history of ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease should begin screening a lot earlier than the average population. And, you know, that's something that usually when you do have that diagnosis or when you know you follow with a gastroenterologist and you're on top of that. But, you know, this in general for average risk, it should be 45.
There are a myriad of reasons as to why people avoid colonoscopies, doctor. So I want you to dispel some of the myths involving colonoscopies. And what can you tell patients to encourage them to schedule one? Because we know how important they are.
Yeah, I think I've never had a patient who was excited to get their colonoscopy. But, you know, colonoscopies have come a long way since the days of our parents. Technology has advanced greatly. We have more advanced scopes that give us better visualization. We have better tools to take out polyps and do other types of interventions. And we have better anesthesia. You know, additionally, endoscopists, meaning the people who perform these colonoscopies, with time, with more experience, we've done lots of these, and I think the skill level has increased in general. So a lot of patients come to see me and they're worried that it's going to be painful or that they'll be able to feel or remember this tube going up inside them. And that's just not true. You know, we have good anesthesia colleagues here that only use the top shelf stuff for our patients during these colonoscopies. And basically a lot of patients basically just take a nap during these. And, you know, I've even had people who wake up after words and they're like, when are we going to get started? You know, I think after people have had their first one, a lot of people tell me it's really not as bad as what they expected. And when people are hesitant, I usually encourage them to talk to friends or family members who are, you know, around their age to kind of get a sense of what to expect. And most of the time, people are like, oh, it's not that bad. You know, it's not as bad as I expected. And, you know, I think a lot of it comes down to the prep, which is never fun, but I think it's a lot better than the days of our parents.
You know, Dr. Perez, you just gave me the ideal segue to my next question. Now, the day before preparation, it does. It scares a lot of people. But even that isn't what it was. It's a lot easier now, isn't it?
It is. It is. You know, again, back in the day, I think people are scared. They hear horror stories of having to drink a gallon of this nasty, salty, gross liquid and having to basically be in the bathroom all night. But things have changed for the better. You know, you can't avoid doing a prep. It's an important part of the colonoscopy because it allows me to be able to see what's in the colon and identify and take out polyps. But nowadays we have a lot of different options for prep, and they usually involve drinking a lot less liquid. Usually, you know, for me personally, I have patients drink essentially Miralax mixed with Gatorade or juice, basically whatever they want to mix it to make it more palatable. It's not a whole gallon, and it's usually just as effective as drinking that whole gallon, but it's much more tolerable. There's less cramping, less bloating, less nausea associated with it. Obviously, you know, you're going to have to be near a toilet, and that's, you know, that's one of the sacrifices you have to make, but it's, you know, it's a good investment in your health and your future.
And that's a great segue into the next question. Everybody's heard horror stories about the prep the day before colonoscopy. A lot of that has changed now over the years. It's a little less awful than it used to be, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, I think, again, there's nothing better than really looking at things with a colonoscopy, but I think there are some viable options for screening for colon cancer. And I think, especially in people who are adamant that they don't want a colonoscopy, at least there's some screening tools that we have that can help do some early detection. And some of those are the stool tests, which we've probably heard of on the radio. There's one called a FIT test, which essentially looks for hidden blood in the stool, which can be a sign of a larger polyp or even early cancer. And then there's also a different type of stool test that basically detects DNA from polyps or from colon cancers, and that's that Cologuard that we've heard of on the TV. Obviously, these tests are a lot less invasive, and the benefit is that you can do them at home. You have to do these more frequently. These usually are a yearly test, and you can have false negatives and you can have false positives, but it's better than nothing. And then from an alternative to colonoscopy there's CT guided colonoscopies, which, you know, you basically still have to do a prep for those, but it's under CT. It takes 10 minutes. You don't need anesthesia, and it can detect polyps that are usually about half an inch or bigger. You know, the problem with these is that if it does detect, you still, even with a Cologuard or with a CT colonoscopy, if there's a polyp detected, you're still going to have to get a colonoscopy to do it. So I think it's better than nothing, than not doing anything. And I think they can be helpful adjunct, but I think ultimately colonoscopy is still the gold standard for early detection and treatment. And I think it's very important also to mention that these other types of screening tests like Cologuard and CT colonoscopies are only good for people who are at average risk, who don't have symptoms. These aren't recommended for people who have a history of polyps. It's not recommended for people who have Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. They have to get regular colonoscopies.
And Dr. Perez, you answered a lot of what my follow-up question was going to be, and that was about the alternatives to a colonoscopy. So thank you for that. And let's revert back for a moment to risk factors. And can you give some suggestions or some advice on what folks can do with their diet to help control those aforementioned risk factors?
Yeah, I think, again, it's important to do a diet high in vegetables, high in fruits, and whole grains. I'm not saying don't eat red meats because, you know, they're good, but, you know, limit the intake of red meats and the more processed meats. And then exercising, you know, you want to get, it's good for the whole body, but some physical activity, couple hours, few hours a week, multiple times per week is important in decreasing some of those risk factors and decreasing the risk of developing colon cancer.
Doctor, your clinical emphasis is advanced laparoscopic and robotic surgery. You've mentioned them a couple of times during this program. Let's go in depth and have you describe the procedures to our listening audience.
Certainly. That's my favorite part. So essentially, advanced laparoscopy and robotic surgery are the same thing. They fall under the category of minimally invasive surgery, or we call it MIS. So what this means is that we can perform surgery usually using 3 to 5 tiny incisions, usually less than an inch. We can then fill up the abdomen or the belly with air, and this allows us to use a camera and small instruments to essentially perform any type of operation. Obviously, colon resection is one of them. Robotic surgery is similar, again, to laparoscopic surgery, but instead of me operating at the bedside, I sit at this robotic console in the room, and I control these 4 robotic arms that essentially perform the surgery. And the benefit of robotic surgery is that, you know, I get 3D visualization, and I can move inside of the abdomen similar to how I would move my wrists, which allows a lot of freedom in motion. And it's especially useful when I'm operating down in the pelvis for some of the cancers that are lower down in the rectum. And it's very, very useful. I think the beauty of minimally invasive surgery is that we can perform these major colon resections through very small incisions. And this has been shown to have decreased complication rates, less pain associated with it. There's a faster recovery and overall better outcomes when you compare to the old fashioned open incision, which usually is an incision from just, you know, below the sternum to the pubic bone. And it's a great technology, and I'm happy, you know, I've had training with it, and I'm happy that I can bring that to Erie. I'm very excited about the future of the technology. When I was in fellowship, I actually had the opportunity to work with the newest robot, which is still under clinical trials, and it's basically a single port robot. So instead of 4 little incisions, we have 1 to 2 inch incision where we can perform the entire surgery just through that one incision, which is, you know, really awesome. And I think that's great. But I think the beauty of these new robots is that we're going to be able to perform surgery transanally, meaning through the anus, to remove some of the larger polyps that otherwise would require a big major abdominal surgery. And that, you know, that means quicker recovery for patients. Usually patients can go home that same day rather than being in the hospital for 3-4 days. So there's a lot of great things ahead in the management of colon and rectal cancer.
You just brought up a few. Are there any other technological advancements in gastroenterology that helps set UPMC apart from the competition when it comes to discovering and treating this form of cancer?
Yeah, I think Hammett has made some great investments in some of the latest endoscopic technology, meaning the scopes that we use to facilitate some of that early detection. I think we have not speaking for myself, we have great skilled gastroenterologists who have a ton of experience, and they can perform different interventional endoscopic techniques to remove some of those larger polyps that would otherwise require surgery. So in addition to the technology, we have great staff that can actually do it. If it does come to the point of needing surgery, we have the latest laparoscopic and robotic technology here at Hammett that can help facilitate that resection and facilitate a better recovery and better outcomes overall. But I think the most important technology that we have is actually our people. And we have great primary care physicians. They're up to date with the latest screening guidelines. They encourage patients to get their colonoscopies and get them referred to the GIs and to the surgeons. We have great GI docs who take great care and great pride in their work. And then in the hospital and in the offices, we have great teams of doctors, nurses, and other specialists who make sure that a patient gets the best possible care before the OR, in the OR, and out of the OR, and has the smoothest recovery possible. And I think that's understated. I think it's very important. And I think UPMC has done a wonderful job of investing in their people and their teams. And then for those cancers that are more advanced, that have spread, we have excellent oncologists at the Hillman Cancer Center who are up to date on the latest technology for treatment, whether it be radiation or chemotherapy, and even some of the clinical trials. So from primary care, screening, surgery, scopes, treatment, UPMC is at the forefront, and I'm glad to be a part of that.
Dr. Perez, thank you so much for joining us on the program today. You've been a tremendous guest. Any parting thoughts on Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month?
Well, I'm glad that we had this conversation. I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to talk about this, because it's something that I'm very passionate about. And this is a very, very important topic because, again, colon cancer is very preventable, and we have to understand that early screening is the key for this. So anybody, if you're over the age of 45, I just want to ask that you call, talk to your primary care, talk about your options, and get screened. I'm happy for you to call our office. Our number is 877-4577. You can make an appointment with me. I'd be happy to talk, and I do perform colonoscopies, and I would be happy to talk more about getting screened and colon health, and happy to help however I can.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Join us again next week as Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor at Penn State Barron, is in the Business Spotlight.